This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 22nd, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is the Rev, Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York. All right, today we have two game sixes. We've got two game sixes going forward. Tonight in Houston, the Red Sox and the Astros in the American League Championship Series, Game 6, Houston leading 3-2. Yesterday was a workout day for both teams down in Houston, and Alex Cora talked about the experience of Game 162 that the Red Sox had, the wild card game, and how that might fuel them in this elimination game against the Astros.
You can say all the cliches, right? One pitch at a time, one play at a time, one inning at a time, one game at a time, one day at a time. It doesn't matter. You name it, we have them. So just a matter of going out there and play a good baseball game tomorrow and then play another good baseball game in 2 days.
Here's Astros manager Dusty Baker.
You just play. You know, you let them play. You don't put any extra pressure on them. You know, like you probably have a little shorter leash than you ordinarily would, you know, on whoever's pitching, unless it's like one of your top dogs or unless, you know, you got Cy Young candidate or something. I mean, you know, like you probably just have a little, you know, a little shorter leash and just let them play.
The guy starting for the Astros today, Luis Garcia, who of course had to come out earlier in the series because of a knee issue. He talked about his excitement of starting game 6.
I'm really happy. I mean, I'm excited. I want to do it good. I want to go tomorrow and compete. And that's what I want. My knee's doing really good right now. I feel really good, like normal, and you know, some adjustment like mechanic and nothing, something like big.
I gotta tell you, Taylor, that a lot of times when we get to this time of year and I hear a player say, oh, that injury I had 5 days ago, no problem, I feel great. I'm like, sure.
Just a slight mechanical change, no big deal. Don't worry, Astros fans.
Oh, my goodness. Nathan Eovaldi starts for the Red Sox, and he talked about his own confidence.
I'm extremely confident. You know, I mean, everybody's a little frustrated with the way we've been playing lately. We know that's not the way we are capable of playing. And, you know, we know where we're at in the standings and where we're at, you know, everything that's on the line for this game. You know, it's do or die. You either lose or you go, or you either win or you go home. So nobody's ready to go home right now. And we're going to be ready to go tomorrow.
Another member of Aaron Boone's coaching staff in 2021 has moved on. Reggie Willits, their first base coach, is going to go on to coach as a volunteer assistant for Oklahoma's college baseball program. In Los Angeles last night, game 5 of the series between the Braves and the Dodgers needing a win just to stay alive in this series. And in the top of the first inning, it didn't look good. Joe Kelly on the mound for the Dodgers.
The 2-0. Swing and a ball drilled out towards right center field. That one's back there on its way. It's gone. Freddie Freeman, a 2-run homer into the pavilion in right center field. And just like that, the Braves jump out front 2-0.
That was the legend Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio. The Dodgers, however, would come back.
Drilled left field. That one back. That's on its way, and that is gone. And Pollock crushes one into the pavilion in left field. And the Dodgers get a run back. It's 2-1.
And Chris Taylor would have himself a night for the Dodgers.
And the pitch. Swing and a high fly ball. Left field, way back, and you can't forget it. Chris Taylor unloads. And that quickly, the Dodgers have taken the lead. It is 3-2. A blast to left by Taylor, and Dodger Stadium has come to life. The pitch. Swing and a little flare out into center field. Fall in, base hit. In to score is Pollock. Taylor with an RBI single, and it's 4-2. Swing and a ball drilled center field. Duvall back, turning, looking, out of here. Chris Taylor having a night. Into the pavilion to the right of the batter's eye. And Chris Taylor touches them all again. He's knocked in 5. And it is 6-2 Dodgers.
The 2-2.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left center field. On its way. He's done it again. Third homer of the night for Chris Taylor. He's knocked in six. And it's all Dodgers 7-2 as he circles the bases. What a game for Chris Taylor.
What a game for Chris Taylor. What a game for the Dodgers. They went 11-2 and they force a game six, which will be played Saturday in Atlanta. The five homers by the Dodgers tie the franchise record for a playoff game. The other game was also against the Braves in the 2020 NLCS. The Dodgers are the third team in postseason history to hit five homers in an elimination game, joining the Padres 2020, the Athletics in 2020 in the ALDS. The Dodgers had 17 hits in the game. It's a franchise record for a playoff game. They've won seven straight elimination games, the third longest streak in postseason history. After the game, Alan Gonzalez spoke with Chris Taylor, who had just an amazing game for the Dodgers.
Chris, you just put together one of the most impressive postseason performances in baseball history. What led to that?
I don't know. You know, I was just one at bat at a time. You know, not trying to do too much, honestly, and things worked out.
That eighth inning at bat, you guys were up big. Nobody's ever hit four home runs in a postseason game. Were you searching for that one?
No, I can't think hit homers. You know, for me, it's always I'm trying to hit line drives, and the homers just happened by accident. But yeah, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. I was just trying to hit a ball hard. He made a good pitch, that changeup down and in. It's a tough one to lay off.
And Chris, this offense has had some up and down nights this postseason. Is there anything from tonight that you guys can draw from that could help you moving forward?
You know, I think we're just going to try to build on the momentum. You know, we go to Atlanta, we got an off day tomorrow, so we're going to relax a little bit. But, you know, it's good to get the bats going, and hopefully we can feed off that.
Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, talked about his players.
I expected our guys to fight and scratch and claw, and I thought we did that. And it's going to be a crazy environment in Atlanta. We know that. I like the guys we're going to be running out there, and we just got to go out there and play to win one game. So our backs are against the wall, and I don't expect to let down.
Max Fried got hit hard in his start for the Braves, and Brian Snicker talked about the left-hander.
You know, we just scored the two runs, which we knew was going to – these bullpen games are tough, and we knew it was going to be. You know, after a while, it just kind of got out of control, obviously. But I think the big thing, just I think if Max was sharp and, you know, we were hoping that he could extend the game. Honestly, I was hoping he'd go at least seven innings. Where we were after the bullpen game, and didn't work out that way.
In 2020, the Braves had a 3-1 lead in the National League Championship Series against the Dodgers, and they blew that lead. And Freddie Freeman, who's effectively the Braves captain, is aware of the narrative.
I mean, that's going to be the narrative, it seems, because every day it's brought up the last couple of days. So I don't think we have a choice until we kill that narrative. We're up 3-2, and we're going home. It's a great position to be in.
There was bad news for the Dodgers. Joe Kelly is out for the rest of the postseason because of a tricep issue. He started as an opener for the Dodgers in game five. Taylor, what do you got?
Buster, a bunch of things. First of all, you can listen to all those postseason games on ESPN Radio tonight, Friday. Tune in at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time for Red Sox at Astros. Tomorrow, Dodgers at Braves. Tune in at 4:30 Eastern time. This email I'm looking at has military time, so it's testing me here, Buster. Fun thing you could also listen to, Tennessee at Alabama. That is on ESPN Radio's air. That is at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And then I don't know how they do this, Buster. This is the magic of radio and whatnot, but Dodgers at Braves, 7:30 p.m. Tune in time for that on Saturday as well. And then Dodgers at Braves, game seven, if necessary, 7 p.m. Tune in time for that. NBA Today, that is on ESPN weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern time, 12 Pacific. And if you're looking for a podcast other than the Baseball Tonight podcast, might I direct you? Baldwin on Campus, college basketball right around the corner. The guys have gone through and previewed the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the ACC, and I produce the show, and I cannot remember the fourth conference we preview. So good producing by me, but check that out wherever you get your podcasts if you're so inclined.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Where's the Rabbit Train this morning, Carl?
Rabbit Train is parked on the Connecticut shoreline waiting for its next ticket. We have to figure out where we're actually going on Monday, whether it's Houston or Los Angeles, or perhaps even a drive, up 95 to Boston. So we got to wait to see. But the train is currently in the station waiting for the next show tonight at around 8 o'clock.
Nice. Yeah, it'll should be a good weekend of baseball because we get the game six tonight. Red Sox are playing against the Astros. And on Saturday night, game six, Dodgers against the Atlanta Braves. Last night, Chris Taylor had a huge night. And in some respects, I know the Dodgers, are often cast as, the team that spends the most. They have the biggest stars, and that's all true. But I've always felt like Chris Taylor embodies a really underrated part of what the Dodgers do, and that is to find undervalued players and help make them better.
Yeah, at its core, I mean, that is what they do. You know, we've talked a lot about Kike Hernandez. Kike Hernandez was expendable to some degree because Chris Taylor, is perceived to be better than he was and more versatile. You look at the Dodgers, you look at the Astros, you look at the Red Sox, you look at the Rays. The common thread for me is athleticism. Mookie Betts is a tremendous athlete, but Taylor is athletic. He's versatile. You look at some of these other station-to-station home run strikeout teams, and they don't have as many of those guys. And you could argue, certainly during periods of time this year, Taylor on a team that has Seager and Muncy and Turner and Betts, et cetera, was as valuable a player and as good a hitter as any of them. And, last night was just the blossoming for one night. And look, he could go 0-for-6 the rest of the series, but that last night was the Virginia Cavaliers night. And, he's a baseball guy. He's pretty low key. There's not a lot to him. He likes baseball. He likes surfing and like Larry Bird way back in the day, he likes his beer.
I was reading that yesterday. It was an AJ Pollock. His teammate was talking about that in terms of things that he likes. He's going to be a free agent in the fall. Chris Taylor. I'm going to be asking Paul Imbachides coming up about what Taylor's going to make in free agency. My guess, when I think about him in the marketplace, my instinct is something in the range of Ben Zobrist type money, $56 million, maybe $60 million. I know somebody might bring up a DJ LeMahieu who got $96 million last winter. You mentioned the importance of Taylor to the Dodgers. I think there's a more than 50-50 chance that Corey Seager moves on to another team. Got any gut feel just off the top of your head of what you think Chris Taylor might wind up with in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the 60 refers to a four-year deal. I figure between 15 and 18 million because he, you know, a lot of times with guys like Chris and I'm not, and they can also kind of cross over that threshold between being the utility guy who, when played every day, occasionally gets exposed, or they do play every day and they flourish because they haven't been in an everyday role. I'd probably put him more in the latter category. I do like him every day. I don't think he's going to be as consistent a producer as somebody like a Betts or a Seager, but those are superstar players. But he's not far, in my opinion, far below and immensely valuable to an organization. I mean, we saw the three homers. We also, you know, got to remember he played third base last night because Justin Turner is unavailable. So he just plug and play. And that's a tremendously valuable asset. And to some extent on the other coast, you're seeing Kike Hernandez become a gold glove caliber center fielder who's, you know, as good a second baseman as the Red Sox have. So Taylor's that guy. There's clearly a place for athleticism, speed, can steal a base, field any position, and obviously come up with big hits and clutch hits and kind of turn the brain off in the moment and not worry about what the stage is and where our backs are, et cetera.
So we saw the Dodgers down 3-1 going into last night's game. They blow out the Braves. It's now 3-2. And of course, as Freddie Freeman said, the Braves are going to have to kill off the narrative of the Braves being unable to knock off the Dodgers, who win elimination game after elimination game after elimination game. For you, does this year feel different than last year? Dodgers trying to come back against the Braves are about the same.
I would say honestly, and I asked this of Tim and Xavier Scruggs last night. I mean, look, I don't play for either of these teams, but it certainly is in my mind. Like, wait a minute, this is going to happen again. Like Max Fried on the mound, this was either the reverse lock game because they can't lose, but because they can't lose, they're going to lose. So it's the old reverse lock. There's a little something to it. And there have been organizations, Red Sox, Cubs, who've lived with that for centuries, let alone for a short period of time. And eventually they exercised, you know, those demons. The Braves certainly have the ability to do it. They're going back home. But yeah, it's in the back of your head. I think to me, what I would try to objectively look at, the idea that you have Max Scherzer and Walker Buehler on the mound feels like you're in a really good position. But nothing about being in a good position in 2021's postseason has led to a positive result. In a lot of ways, it's gone the other way. You know, bullpen game, we win. Best starter second half, we lose. Max Scherzer, multiple Cy Young winner, we lose. You know, Walker Buehler, rested, we lose instead of automatic wins. So that's where I'd go. And the most unpredictable postseason has played out right in front of our eyes. So while it feels like Scherzer and Buehler's a really good position to be in, gosh, how many teams have been in really good positions this postseason and it hasn't gone their way?
Yeah, 100%. I do what you're saying about the Dodgers. I do believe experience becomes a weapon. There's no doubt about it. I witnessed this firsthand. I never, you know, 2001 for the Yankees, they had won three straight World Series. They'd been in the postseason every year. They played in so many big games. They faced in the first round of the playoffs that year Oakland, which was a better team than the Yankees. There's no doubt about it. And the Yankees found a way to win that series, the Jeter flip, et cetera. Then they moved on to the American League Championship Series against the Seattle Mariners, who won 116 games in the regular season. They were clearly, Seattle was a better team that year, and the Yankees blew them out. I think it was in five games. Then they go to the World Series, and I think you would agree with me, Arizona dominated about 98% of that World Series.
Yep.
And yet the Yankees carried a lead into the bottom of the ninth inning of Game 7 before losing. And I felt all along that experience played a big role in them even being in that position.
Look, I agree 100%. There's no question about it that the only way to overcome these things or at least get them out of your head is to experience them. So you try not to. But this concept, like the mental side of it, I don't I don't think that the psyche, because the players are different, and we've used this example before, and certainly when the Red Sox broke the curse or the Cubs broke the curse, many of them hadn't participated in postseasons with that organization prior. And it's very easy to look at it and say, well, wait a minute, I wasn't part of that. Like, there is something bigger than the history in the past as it relates to these types of streaks. And that's the fact that we've never experienced it. So you can talk all you want about the sort of fragility of Atlanta, forget Braves, but Atlanta sports folks. Welcome to the club of cities that have struggled with winning Super Bowls or NBA titles or World Series. There's many, but many of them get over it. This is the perfect storm of, golly, we just had this experience last year. But my gosh, were those new four outfielders with Atlanta last year? Like, what impact does that have on them? Ian Anderson, I'm sorry. I don't think Ian Anderson is going to look back and be like, yeah, I remember this feeling, and I'm going to walk into this haunted house, and I'm going to get scared again when somebody peeks out from behind the closet door. Like, I don't go there, but sure, it is at least in the back of the sports fan's mind. We've seen this play before, you know, pretty good play. We've seen it, but I'm wondering, can we get a different ending? We'll see.
Nathan Eovaldi pitching for the Red Sox tonight in game 6. What's your sense of what's going to happen? Astros, Red Sox.
Yeah, I have no idea because, again, 2021 has not allowed us to have any idea.
Carl, would you agree with me? I thought for sure after game 3, Houston was dead. Like, their rotation was just ravaged by injury. They weren't performing very well. They got blown out in 2 and 3. I never would have guessed that they'd be a game away from winning the series in game 6.
Look, Buster, both of these series, the Dodgers were dead. The Astros were dead. The reason the Dodgers and their fans should have some hope is that Max Scherzer should have plenty of hope. Max Scherzer wasn't great his last time that he started. He wasn't good the last time when he said, my arm is dead. Framber Valdez was brutal in his first start. Framber Valdez was Sandy Koufax in his next start. So yes. Again, the unpredictability of, well, I don't think he's feeling good or he doesn't have it. Chris Taylor's not hitting well. He just hit 3 home runs. So Nathan Eovaldi has looked great. Nathan Eovaldi just did what Scherzer did and pitched in relief, which I don't quite understand, but he pitched in relief. So does that mean he's going to be tired and suck in his next start, or is he going to be great? All of those unknowns continue to kind of resurface, and when you think you have your head around it, it tends to go the other way. And just, can we just digress for 1 second on the manager's use of starters? When you watched last night's game and Joe Kelly came out and they paraded in, you know the names, but Vesia was great. But even beyond that, you got into Brusdar Graterol, and then you got into Blake Treinen, and then you got into Kenley Jansen. Every single Corey Knebel, every single one of them was unhittable. So on what level, what is the analytic number that says I need to press the Scherzer button here and not the Treinen button or not the Knebel button? Or, right. You know what, somebody would have to explain that to me, because when you looked at Joe Kelly, when he came out of the game, you did say to yourself, okay, they're up 2-0. The Braves are going to win this game. And then you realized after watching all 4 or 5 of those guys, when they went, you know, what is it, 8 1/3, 9 strikeouts, no walks. And by the way, the next two words are no chance. There was no chance that the Braves were going to hit any of those guys. What is the metric that says, what is the page in the booklet? What is the thinking of the front office or manager or pitching coach that says, you know what, Scherzer, you know what, Eovaldi? And in the Dodgers case, my God, they have 4 closers in that bullpen. It doesn't mean it's going to work every night, but when it's right, holy smokes, that was unhittable for the remainder of the game when Kelly came out. Unhittable.
All right. I need your help with some of the Bleacher tweets today. Some of them are related, as you'll hear, to the conversation I had with Sarah Langs yesterday about the looming changes with the electronic strike zone and the rules working against this parade of relievers that we've seen since the Rays introduced the opener of May in 2018. Elizabeth Hart asks, which will happen first, Carl? Automated strike zone implemented in the majors, or the Dodgers lose an elimination game in the postseason?
Wow, that's a good question. Only because I'd say the Dodgers are going to lose. The strike zone's coming, and it should come. And this notion that if the strike zone comes, we're watching a video game. Okay, well then baseball is going to win, because the popularity of video games far outweighs the popularity of generally any professional sport. So sure, if you can make it look like a video game and you can have that box up on the screen and you can see somebody hit it, and you know it's a strike, then you win. And the idea that we're taking away the human element, oh God. I'm glad we removed the human element from things like flying,
tennis,
and air traffic safety. I'm good with that. In this case, as I've said before on the podcast and elsewhere, if it's a strike, it's a strike. I can't stand the idea that because the pitcher doesn't hit the catcher's glove, even though it's in the strike zone, it's a ball somehow. That's garbage. I could leave my glove on home plate. If it's in the box, it could hit me in the chest. It should still be a strike. Just because it doesn't hit my glove doesn't mean it's not a strike. So I'd say the Dodgers lose an elimination game, but the strike zone, the automatic strike zone, is coming.
What year? Just one word. Give me one word. What year does it happen? What's your guess?
2024.
Okay. I think it's going to be 2023. We'll see how that goes. Louisville Slugger writes in, love the idea of having the DH spot tied with the starting pitcher. Perfect hybrid of AL and NL ball. Do you think that'll make DH-only guys obsolete, and how will that affect the market for upcoming free agents like Nelson Cruz and Kyle Schwarber? Yeah, Carl, I talked about yesterday that one of the elements of trying to curb this use of parade of relievers is that they're going to tie the DH to the starting pitcher, so that when the starting pitcher comes out, the teams will lose that DH. So do you think that'll affect the market for guys like Nelson Cruz and Kyle Schwarber? I don't think so, because I think there'll be teams that'll value those at bats, whether they're three or four plate appearances.
I don't want that. I think the DH, especially when it goes universal, is a vital part of this. I mean, I thought the goal was to generate more offense. If we're going to tie it to the pitcher and the pitcher comes out and you lose the DH, well, then aren't you kind of cutting off your legs there? You want more offense. You want more balls in play. I understand you want to limit the number of pitchers that are being used, but we want to see balls in play and balls hit. So to eliminate the DH when we just made it a universal DH and tie it to the pitcher doesn't make a great deal of sense to me. I think those guys are going to be hugely valuable assets. And I hope that we encourage offense in the game. At the same time, if we limit rosters and number of pitchers on each team, that's fine. Maybe they stay in the game longer. And look, the bullpenning that we just discussed works in the postseason, especially with off days. It doesn't work in the regular season. So the idea that when we witness it work, we're going to then eliminate or dilute starting pitchers, that's a false narrative too. You need starting pitchers. You need depth. And the Rays may be the greatest example of that next year, when we see that they have three or four great starting pitchers and their idea of openers and bullpenning probably gets shelved for a year or two.
Don Irvine poses this question. Is Dusty Baker out managing Alex Cora? If the Astros win it, will it be redemption for Baker and his managerial style? For the record, Carl, yesterday I talked about how I did feel like in real time I was surprised that Alex Cora left Chris Salen to face Yordan Alvarez in game five. What do you think?
Well, I was surprised after, because I was there and I was sitting in, probably 11 rows back, had a really fortunate seat that night right behind home plate, and watching Chris throw 98, 99 to get through the fifth inning. Like I thought that's it. Like, we're done. Like, he's done. We sort of seen a new level of Sale. He had to get guys out. He fired the ball as hard as he has thrown it since he's come back from surgery. Okay, we literally just ran on empty, and we pulled into the gas station, and you know what? We didn't get to the pump. We're not going to be filled back up. So the Alvarez part of it, sure, I didn't understand that. I do understand it's Chris Sale, and you're going to go tell Chris Sale or take him out before he gets a chance to face Yordan Alvarez, that's a difficult call. It's a call you should be able to make. But Alex has made a living kind of trusting his gut. It's worked really well. I was shocked he came out after the fifth inning, let alone to deal with the Alvarez at bat. But that was deep into that inning. I thought he did such a good job, and you always want to leave a guy with a positive feeling. Take him out. And maybe if he had the Dodgers bullpen at his disposal, that would have happened. And maybe he doesn't feel great about his bullpen.
Last one, WC Shows 23 wrote in this morning, ESPN and MLB want the Dodgers and Astros to play against each other in the World Series so badly. That's why the umpires are trying hard to help make that happen. It's so obvious. So I asked, this is my question off of that. Carl, who's giving the marching orders to the umpires in their strike zone? Is it me or is it you or Hembo? I can't keep up with which one of us is telling umpires what to do with their strike zones.
No, I forgot. I thought Bob Nightingale was appointed for this month. So I think he's the one that's doing that this month. I thought you had next May, and I think I'm on the schedule for next July. Unfortunately, the conspiracy theory thing has so many holes in it, it's not worth spending a great deal of time on. But we don't carry the World Series, so we don't particularly care who's in it per se as a company. But the notion that all media folks can conspire on anything is so blind. It's just not worth addressing.
None of us can agree on what sandwich we want for lunch.
No,
let alone on who we want to see in the World Series. And the idea, Carl, of you or I telling Joe West what his strike zone's going to be.
And in fact, I recall, Buster, on this podcast, when we went into the World Series, we made predictions, and I took the Astros, the Dodgers, and you took the Braves and the Red Sox.
Yep.
So I'm confused as to the conspiracy theory.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. All right, Ravi. Well, have a great day. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, of course, is Paul Imbecides, a researcher at ESPN, who is Mike Greenberg's sidekick on the radio show. He has not quite taken over the desk at Get Up, but those are his plans. Hembo, before we get into the baseball of the day, I got to ask you, have you ever seen the movie Road Warrior? Because before we got started today, Tail and I were talking about movies you've seen, and he was like, what's your favorite movie of all time? And I said, I don't know if it's my favorite movie of all time, but I've probably seen this one movie 120 times or so, and that would be Road Warrior. So I need to know, have you ever seen Road Warrior?
I have never seen Road Warrior, Buster. What year did that come out?
I believe it was 1980. Okay. And Mel Gibson should have won an Oscar for this scene alone.
2 days ago, I saw a vehicle that had hauled that tanker. You want to get out of here? To me.
That's right. Emotion all over the place there. I've tried to redo that for my kids. I just can't bring myself to the pure brilliance of Mel Gibson in that moment. What'd you think?
I mean, I think that you're really showing your age here, Buster. I was born in the year 1990. We do this all the time on the radio. Greeny asked me if I've seen a movie or heard a song. It's invariably from long before I was born. I always say no. He makes fun of me for it. Like, is this something that needs to be on my short list of things that I have to have seen? Or is the or is this disqualify as something that you like a lot? Like, is this on me or is this on you?
No, I think you should watch it. Just don't watch it with your wife, okay? Because if you watch it, if you make a point of watching it with your wife, she's going to look at you weird at the end of the movie and say, you wanted to see this movie?
No. Okay. I will. So I no, watched it's movie by myself.
It's a little bit in the Scarface realm, okay? It's probably a little bit too much blood and guts and stuff and going on. Does that make sense?
It's not like, yeah, it's not like a good movie to come home to after a nice candlelight Italian dinner is what you're saying?
No. No. I think she would serve papers on you after that.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that might happen anyway, but we'll do Road Warrior.
Well, I can speak to that firsthand, so that definitely happened.
Too soon.
So let's talk about Chris Taylor. Big night last night, three home runs. He's now 31 years old. What's your guess on the deal that he gets in free agency this fall? Because I have a specific set of numbers in mind.
Interesting. I think the number could approach $100 million, believe it or not. Something in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 years at something approaching $20 million a year. It might sound crazy for a player,
yeah,
Buster.
Yeah, it does. I'm just going to tell you right now, that sounds crazy. Okay. But keep going.
Tell me why. Well, the reason I feel this way is because even though we have sort of viewed him as, you know, a super utility player of sorts for the Dodgers, the production has been not extraordinary, but the production has been excellent for the role in which he has occupied. I mean, this season alone, Buster, he played six different positions, at least 50 innings. And he's been essentially, over the last 5 years, a constant contributor to that team with about 15 wins above replacement and OPS plus of 115. I don't think it's out of the question that a team that swings and misses on Chris Bryant couldn't get 75 or 80% of Chris Bryant with Chris Taylor. Now, I'm of the opinion that Chris Bryant is going to command a contract well over $200 million. Again, maybe on the high side. We got to get each other on the record here then. I'm going to say Chris Bryant, I'm going to set that number at $200 million as our over-under. And for Chris Taylor, I'm going to set that number as $100 million. You're going to take the under on both of those numbers.
Absolutely. You're going to lose both. It's not even going to be close.
Well, tell me why.
You got us locked in, Taylor?
Noted. It's on the board.
Okay. So tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I think Chris Taylor gets, and here's why. First off, he's 31 years old. Okay. Teams are not paying players at that age as much as they have in the past. I think the number is going to be closer to what Ben Zobrist got with the Cubs. I think it's going to be that 4 for 56, 4 for 60 range, something in there. Here's what would concern me if I were a team. One of the questions I would ask, as you know, he does unbelievable damage against fastballs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. At that age, if he gets any sort of regression, he becomes a very different player when it comes to handling high velocity.
There's no question about that. And there's also a reasonably significant platoon split. I mean, obviously, he mashes left-handed pitching, and he's about a league average hitter against righties. But I think you're overlooking one thing, Buster, and that is the extraordinary value that a player that can play across the field provides with a plus bat. Maybe the $20 million a year that I'm sort of projecting out might only happen if he's willing to accept something like a 3-year contract. So maybe that would make your sort of total value a little bit more closer than what I think. But Chris Taylor has proven to be an extremely valuable player across the board for them in both ways. And when you look at this, shortstop market, which is so filled up, I'm not so sure that a team might not identify him as someone who could try and play there. He obviously has not, quite been a league average performer there. And with Seager and Turner, there's no reason for them to even play him there now, obviously. But I'm not so convinced that there's going to be at least one team around the league that views him as a lot closer to Chris Bryant than maybe, the public would, for example. I think he's going to approach $100 million.
I think you're right in terms of approaching what Chris Bryant gets, but I don't think Chris Bryant sniffs $200 million.
Okay, fair enough.
We'll see how that goes. One thing to watch in tonight's game 6, Red Sox against the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, how much length does Alex Cora get out of his starting pitching? Because that is, to me, overwhelmingly the biggest storyline here, Buster, because so far in 5 games this series, Boston has outscored their opponent by 19 runs in the first 3 innings. They've gotten out like gangbusters, obviously. But the Astros are plus 17 after the 5th. That's sort of the pendulum swing of this series. And Alex Cora we had discussed this a week ago, has had extraordinary success in the playoffs in managing his bullpens. Entering this series, his bullpen ERA as a postseason manager was 2.8. It's nearly 7 in this series. And we knew the Red Sox had all sorts of issues on the back end, but they did so well against Tampa and obviously managed the game against the Yankees in the Wild. But to me, that's the overwhelming storyline here. If the Red Sox can't build something like a 2 or 3 run lead halfway through that game, they're not going to win. Because this Houston Astros lineup, Buster, is unlike any I've seen in recent years. They are so incredibly deep. and so incredibly relentless. Carlos Correa is a Hall of Fame talent. He's hitting fifth for this team. They're ridiculously good. And at home against that Red Sox bullpen, that game is, if the Red Sox aren't leading by two or three runs once we hit the sixth, that game is over. Houston's going to win.
All right. So we talked in the podcast yesterday with Sarah about the anti-bullpen games. And I use that phrase because they talked about the parade of relievers and how people in baseball can't stand it. And that there are almost certainly rules forthcoming to try to begin to curb the use of relievers and to incentivize the use of starting pitchers. What do you got on that?
Well, my goodness. Where do we begin? So I've been working on this little project for you, and what I'll do is at least provide you a couple of the notes that I think are most interesting and illuminating how we got to this point, I guess, for lack of a better term. So right now, Buster, throughout the postseason, starting pitchers are averaging 12 outs per start. 12. They're averaging 4 innings per start, which, not surprisingly, would be the lowest mark in any postseason in Major League history. And that's obviously felt when you're watching the games. It should come as no surprise. But it's not just the postseason where you've seen this sort of manifest. Buster, only 39 pitchers, 39 in a 30-team league qualified for the ERA title this year.
Wow.
39 pitchers threw enough innings to qualify for the ERA title. That just 10 years ago, 2011, that number was 94. Buster, the Tampa Bay Rays won 100 games this year without a single pitcher that qualified for the ERA title. Maybe we need to, you know, change how we decide how that's calculated. But the point remains the same. And there is absolutely no question whatsoever that teams have changed the way that they pay players as well. If you look at about 5 years ago, if we're just going to sort of look at these things and as they progress, starting pitchers commanded this year in payroll about $200 million fewer dollars than they did 5 years ago. And as you're sort of projecting these things forward now with the next collective bargaining agreement, I would have to imagine that has to be a priority here because the starting pitcher has been so devalued that when you're watching playoff games, who starts almost doesn't matter. And league-wide, over the course of the last 5 years, there have been a massive decrease in how much you're willing to pay them too. So that, who knows exactly how much that will factor into these discussions. Obviously, baseball is going to have to conquer a lot of these issues. But those are a couple numbers that especially stood out to me.
A decade ago, 39 starting pitchers reached the 200-inning benchmark. 39, right? Mm. This year, four reached 200 or more innings. And it's amazing how quickly this has changed because the opener that was used by the Tampa Bay Rays, May 19th, 2018, little more than 3 years ago. And yet now we have all these bullpen games. All right. We also talked about the forthcoming electronic strike zone. I don't know if it's going to be next year or the year after that, but it's coming, Hembo. What do you think?
Well, I view it as inevitable like you do, but I'm wary. I'm wary of this. And the reason for it is because I just have to ask myself, like, in what ways have technology and information made baseball obviously better? Not smarter, but better. Because I grew up, long before I was a baseball researcher, I grew up in enjoying the beauty of baseball's subjectivity and the nuance and the art. There is no beauty in the electronic strike zone or the StatCast stuff, the black and white, the science. And so perhaps if it can be proven to me that this will make the game objectively better, then I'm all in. But I personally don't mind the sort of push and pull between the old school and the new school when it comes to these debates and continuing to have them. I don't think it's that bad of a thing for baseball. What I do think is bad for baseball is that in its most important games, when everything obviously matters most, that so much of the conversation is being dominated by, for example, the strike zone of Blas Diaz. Like, that's not what we want. We like, the first question I should be asked the day after an awesome baseball game is not, what did you think about that strike ball call? And now, like, all the networks using the K-Zone, which I personally don't like, but everyone uses them. And so it's an inevitable part of the conversation. We have brilliant players. They're as talented as they've ever been. But if you just sort of take inventory, Buster, of the conversations that have dominated baseball over the last month, very few of them have anything to do with that. It's always this other crap. It's always this other stuff. So if the electronic strike zone works and it can be proven that it will make the game better and not just continue to add to baseball sort of information subterfuge, I'll be in. But consider me as something of a skeptic there, as someone who, unlike most of my statistical brethren, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, as you know.
It's just too much of a variable. you know, and I always go back. I covered for the New York Times the 1997 game with Eric Gregg, basically umpiring the left-handed strike zone, far different than the right-handed strike zone. Mm-hmm. Ron Hernandez, to his great credit, recognized that with his catcher Charles Johnson, set a strikeout record because they took advantage of it. And you go back and look at some of those pitches, it was ridiculous. the umpire should not be a variable from game to game. All right, before we go, I'm going to let you hear it one more time. Oscar worthy, here's Mel Gibson.
2 days ago, I saw a vehicle that had hauled that tanker. You want to get out of here? You talk to me.
Hembo, you on board with me about giving him an Oscar? I mean, even I think he should Lifetime Achievement Award, something.
Listen, I'm going to have to watch the movie, not with my wife, not after an Italian candlelight dinner. I will let you know how it goes, and I'll get back to you. But just please, I mean, I'm 31. Taylor's even younger than me. Some less dated references would be helpful moving forward.
Yes. Watch it at 8 o'clock before your wife has even started to wake up. Because she knows you watch this movie, she's going to be like, oh, my God, who's the psycho that I married? All right. Thank you.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. Jeremiah Avis-Roos, apologies on the pronunciation there, Jeremiah, but he writes in, do you think the Atlanta case study, many cheaper good players instead of one expensive great player, has an impact on the offseason?
No, Jeremiah, and I'll tell you why. Because I think that what happened with the Braves this year was an outlier situation. What happened behind the scenes is that following the pandemic and the empty ballpark last year, Liberty held down the payroll for the team. They made them cut payroll, which is why they didn't re-sign Adam Duvall and they didn't make some of those moves. Then the ballpark opened in Atlanta. The Braves had among the highest attendance figures in baseball. Their place was absolutely filled. Fans flocked back. And then we got to July, and then Liberty gave the front office the flexibility to go out and add all those moves. And I just don't think that situation is going to be replicated where, the team suddenly is going to have a ton of money available because of a pandemic. So I don't think it's something that they'll use going forward.
Last for today, we've got Ernesto Cedillo at EarnYC377. Buster, Rev, Bev, I cannot believe the Giants almost left San Francisco today. They're one of the most profitable franchises in the league and have arguably the best fan base as well. They show up whether they're rebuilding or winning 107 games. Nice little shout out to Todd there with his forgotten franchises.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that, Todd. I think you agree. Todd just did an amazing job all year with those forgotten franchises. And I know you were talking yesterday probably about trying to do something where you put those together.
Yeah, we've had people talk about them, doing that before, a little bit last season as well. But I think the forgotten franchises really lend themselves to their own contained episodes. So we'll try and chop those up in the holiday season so you have a little something extra to listen to as you travel around and visit family and friends. So that does it for Bleacher Tweets for today. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Enjoy the games, everyone. We'll see you Monday.
And we had a lot of Bleacher Tweets today. That's it for today. My thanks to the Rev, to Ravi, to Hembo. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.